Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
This podcast is brought to you by Voyage AC.
Yeah, so who gets the lilac highball candle and who gets the 16-inch French cut tapered vase?
Well, what's the burn time on those?
I'm impressed you even knew to ask that, huh? The highball has a burn time of 80 hours and the 16-inch has a burn time of 500 hours.
500 hours, that's a lot of baths and candlelight dinners.
Right, and parties and moot lighting. And candle lovers, when your candle is all gone, instead of buying a new one at full price, you can bring your votive to Voyage AC and Melanie will refill it for you. You can save 10% off the price of the candle.
What? What a great deal.
Right? And yes, it is holiday shopping time, but do not wait until it's too late. And do not, I repeat, do not stress.
Thank you for that.
Yes, because you can find everything you need for everybody at Voyage AC. Voyage AC has gorgeous face and body products for every age and gender, beautiful scents, incredible candles, and scents for the home. So how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find Voyage AC at our brand new website at theonlyonepod.com, or you can go to www.voyageac.com directly. That's VOYAGEETCIE.com.
And even during the holidays, Melanie is still willing to give my friends and family discount to all you listening right now.
What?
That's right. That's 10% off everything you buy.
All you need to do is enter the only one at checkout.
That's right. All you have to do is enter the only one when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is the ultimate luxury blend of travel, design, and scents.
This podcast is supported by Cute Booty Lounge, our season 11 sponsor.
Yes, and we are so excited about Kelly Nishimoto. Mm-hmm. She's the founder and CEO of Cute Booty Lounge's new podcast called Behind the Booty, where Kelly interviews different survivors and thrivers about their journey.
Behind the Booty. What a great name.
I know, right? Isn't it? And we love Kelly and CBL, that's Cute Booty Lounge, so much that we're actually premiering some of the first episodes of Behind the Booty right here on The Only One in the Room. You heard one last week. Look for it on Thursdays for the next few weeks.
That's right. Cute Booty Lounge is made right here in the USA by women and for women. The company is incredible. Female and minority owned.
And everything they make makes your booty look amazing. The dresses, the tops, the lounge and sleepwear, and their leggings have these super cute patented scrunch butt pockets. There is a cute booty style for everyone. Cute Booty Lounge has you covered. Embrace your body, love your booty.
So head over to cutebooty.com and enter the code THEONLYBOOTY to get 15% off your first order.
15% off is amazing. You need to jump on that right now.
Right? So head to cutebooty.com and enter the code THEONLYBOOTY to get 15% off your first order. And don't forget to tune in on Thursdays for a new episode of Behind the Booty.
So, hey, we've been making this podcast for over 2.5 years.
What?
Yep, thanks to listeners like you. And from the gate, people have asked us for merchandise or additional content or even some hang time with me and Scott.
That's weird.
It is. But we think we have a solution for you.
Yep, we are excited to announce that we have a new Patreon page.
Yeah, and you know how people are patrons of the arts? Well, in this case, we're the arts.
Hmm. And by becoming a Patreon, you'll get bonus content, access to outtakes that the general public will never see, extremely cool merch, And depending on what tier you get on, a monthly hang time with Laura and I.
Yep, and it all starts at just $5 a month.
That's nothing.
Right? Not per day, not per week. It's only $5 per month.
And you're guaranteed merchandise.
Yeah, oh, that's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. So click the link in the show notes to read about the different tiers and see what great stuff you can get. Become a podcast patron. Join our Patreon today at www.patreon.com/theonlyoneintheroom.
I'm Gina Green, and I'm the only one in the room who's Black, Jewish, Orthodox, and progressive. The Jewish community in the United States does have these markings of success and can still be marginalized and oppressed in different ways. As someone who experiences sexism, racism, and anti-Semitism sometimes in the same damn day, only I, as a Black person, can say what's racist, and as a woman, say what's sexist, and as a Jew, say what's anti-Semitic. It still is in the purview of the oppressed community to decide what's harm. And that is something that's like so live right now, especially in the United States, that I grapple with all the time.
I'm probably one of the few people I know who still looks forward to my Sunday newspaper. Not a digital copy that I read on my phone, but the real finger-staining, loud crinkling, section-by-section newspaper. The Sunday paper for me is a treat to be enjoyed while lounging in bed and sipping hot lemon water. So one day when we were going through all of the Only One stories that are being submitted to us, thank you for those, by the way. We love reading them. It was Scott's idea to record and release a few of them occasionally, but always on Sundays, and call them our Sunday edition. And because they're only 30 minutes long, our hope is that you can enjoy them while sipping your morning beverage, going for a walk, or even just enjoying a lazy Sunday at home. Please enjoy today's Sunday edition, and be sure to listen every Tuesday when we drop another brand new episode of The Only One in the Room. We are live with Gina Green, is who we're live with right now. Hi, Gina.
Hello, hello.
So happy to have you here. And I know you're in South Carolina and we're in Los Angeles, but through the power of technology, we get to be together on this day.
Together, here we are. Is the weather great there? I'm just curious, like, is it a nice LA day today?
It's the high's 84 today, so yes.
Lucky y'all.
It is one of those enviable California days for sure.
Yeah. The clouds just came through here, so.
Okay. Well, yeah, I saw that storm coming through. It came from the West Coast all the way over to you guys.
It started on your end, although y'all didn't get a lot of the water, right? It was all Northern California. That thing went all the way across the country and was, you know, flooding people's basements in New York again. It was wild.
Yeah. Tornadoes. It wreaked havoc everywhere.
Yep.
All right. So here's your icebreaker. You ready?
All right.
Scotty, will you start a clock for 30 seconds?
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, it's timed?
I know, right? You get timed. Good thing good thing you're in the afternoon there already.
Right? So, Gina Green, in 30 seconds, I'm going to see how many Jewish holidays you can name. Ooh. And, honey, you just tell her when to start.
Okay, ready? 3, 2, 1, go.
Rosh Hashanah. Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Shmini Atzeret, Simchat Torah, Chanukah, Tu B'Shvat, Purim, Pesach, Passover, Shavuos, and then we've got fast days, which aren't holidays, but sort of. Fast of Esther, fast of the 10th of Tevet, fast of, oh gosh, 9th of Av, Tisha B'Av, and the fast of 17 Tammuz.
You had 14.
Oh, that was amazing.
I mean, that's like one every 2 seconds. That's pretty good.
I mean, if you just asked me to name how many holidays, period, I could name in 30 seconds, I wouldn't have gotten that many. So you did great.
That was a little stressful, y'all.
You were wonderful. You far exceeded my expectations, which is actually, that was how my conversation with you was before. So I should have expected you to far exceed my expectations.
That warms my little heart.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I am Laura Cathcart Robbins. This is The Only One in the Room. But I'm never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, honey. So we are talking to Gina Green. She is a strategist, consultant, movement builder, now helping Jewish and other organizations change through her new firm, Uprise. She is on the boards of progressive Jewish groups, including Bend the Ark and the Jews of Color Initiative, lives in Columbia, South Carolina, where she went to high school and college. Her interests include cooking, bourbon, and annihilating her four children. So I should finish that, right?
Yes, please.
At Scrabble.
And bananagrams. Bananagrams, yes. Too.
And bananagrams, even on Shabbat. So welcome, Gina. Welcome, welcome officially. And we're so happy to have you here. And this is such an interesting topic for me. So thank you for coming on to talk about it.
Thank you for having me. This is, I'm really, really delighted to be here with y'all today. I think we're going to have a good time.
We are. Tell me, how do you identify?
Whew. I'm a Black Jewish woman. That's like the first thing I will say. And then after that, there's like another layer for me that is about the work that I do in the world. I feel like I'm really connected to who I am is so much put out into the world by the work that I do. And so I don't say I'm a Black Jewish woman strategist or a Black Jewish woman consultant because it doesn't rise to that level, but it is really, really important to me. And I've been doing the work that I do pretty much since I could do work. And so I'd say that that's really important. Another feature of me, another way I identify is as a mom now, but I think motherhood is interesting and it being an identity is something that I wrestle with. And so I don't claim it like that all the time, but it's also an important part of who I am.
I love that answer. And I was just thinking about that parent identity earlier this morning, actually. Mm. And it has to do with something I'm writing, but I think that's serendipitous that you brought that up. One of those spiritual breadcrumbs, as Scotty would say. I'm on the right path with something.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're from South Carolina. You didn't always live there.
Correct.
And you're back there now.
I'm back there now.
But you were raised kind of loosely in the Christian faith. Is that right?
That's correct. You know, I say I'm South Carolina born, raised, and returned. And so I'm back now. I'm not in the same part of the state that I grew up in. I grew up on the coast in a small town. Now I'm in the capital city. But I grew up loosely associated with Christianity. My mom was a lapsed Catholic, and my dad was a Baptist who still went to church. And so sometimes I would end up going to church with him, sometimes going to mass with my grandparents. So yeah, that was my growing up. And the interesting thing about how I grew up is that I had two siblings who were 12 and 14 years older than I am. So I had a different experience with faith and with religiosity than even they did in the same household, essentially. But yeah, it's interesting to be back home in the place where I was.
Mm. And you talked about giving the Easter speech at some point.
Yes.
When was that?
Yes. So a hallmark in the Black church is Easter. I mean, it's a hallmark in all churches, but the Easter speech, the Easter performances that children would do, and you had an Easter speech that everyone had, all the kids had, and the little kids would come up and say, you know, five words, and the older kids would say something a little bit longer, and someone would sing, but you always had a presence and a face. And I remember that is probably the giving of the Easter speech is probably the one thing about going to church as a kid that I really, really remember. It was something that was done every year, no matter what. You had to do an Easter speech and get your Easter clothes. You know, now it's Shabbos clothes, but back then it was Easter clothes and church clothes.
Right. Right. Tell me then about seeing Eyes on the Prize. Mm. I don't know how old you were when you saw that.
I don't remember
how old I was either. But I know that you had an experience with that. Yeah. Around.
Right. Yeah, I don't know how old I was either. It was early 80s, little kid. And, you know, you don't grow up in the South. You probably don't grow up Black anywhere, but I only grew up Black one place. So you don't grow up Black in the South without being, you know, you're the history is just, it's lived. Like, it's not, it didn't just happen back then. Like, you feel it when you grow up in the South. And so knowing about the civil rights era, knowing about that movement and being the daughter of the folks I was the daughter of, I'd always had an understanding and an awareness of the movement and civil rights and that pursuit of progress. But I remember seeing Eyes on the Prize, which was the first time I remember it being captured on film and delivered to me via screen, right? Before then, it had been books and conversations and magazines and images, but not something moving. And we all know the power of film and the power of the moving image and how it can really move folks. And that was the first time I'd seen the marches happening, like footage of people marching. And that was also the first time I really felt like I saw people who weren't Black, and not centering, but seeing people who weren't Fannie Lou Hamer and who weren't Dr. King. And I'd be like, well, who are these people who aren't those folks that I've heard about so much? And then from there, being like, oh, those were the Jews. Like, those were often Jews. Those were often rabbis who were arm in arm with Dr. King. And that began for me a lifelong, at this point, interest and connection and pursuit of Jewishness.
Well, and when you and I talked, we talked about the fact that when I was married before to the father of my children, who's also Jewish, he and I were married by a rabbi that marched with Jesse Jackson during the civil rights movement. He was that kind of rabbi. And the whole temple had this vibe of, we're all in this together, and really invited and created space for the Black community, which I thought was really unique, but it's not as unique as I thought, because there were several rabbis, like you said, who were part of that movement and really they risked their families and their lives to be a part of it. You're married to a Jewish man, which I want to talk about, but you converted to Judaism before you met him. Is that right?
After I met him, after we'd been married. So
You were interested in Judaism.
Correct. Exactly. Prior. Exactly.
Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So what part? Like the interest part before him or converting after we were actually married?
No, the interest part before him. Yeah. Synagogue hopping.
Synagogue hopping. And it was less synagogue hopping and more like event hopping, like going to, you know, synagogues for their events and for their holidays and for things like that. And hopping around Hillel events at the University of South Carolina, following my friend Melissa Bronheim around on campus at that point in time when I was in college. So when I really discovered Judaism, because, you know, my small town, everybody was Black, white, and Christian. From my point of view, from what I could see, we had one Asian family in the 80s and 90s. And, you know, you go back now and it's a totally different place and a much more diverse community, which was great. But I began really in middle school, elementary school, obviously asked that question about, you know, who were these people, and figured out that they were Jews. And this was the Jewish community. And this pursuit of social justice was actually embedded within the Jewish tradition in a really strong way. And for many American Jews, this is a big piece of their Jewishness. That deeper understanding and knowledge didn't even come to me until college, when I was taking classes and I was hanging out with Hillel folks and I was going to various events. And then as I got older and really began to see how deeply Tikkun Olam, this notion of repairing the world, social justice, was really so much a part of the tradition, it really felt like this was the place for me. It never felt like the church was the place for me. And so the synagogue then became someplace where I felt like I could live both my values as a person, but then also learning more about the faith and more of the religious aspects were very appealing to me as well, which didn't come until much later.
That's the kind of work you do, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
You got kind of lit up for that work, like that became the light for you and you went toward it and you found it there in those synagogues and in the Jewish faith and with the people that you were meeting there. Like, this is, like you said, interwoven into Judaism and their principles, right?
Yes. And, you know, I think it's really important to recognize that Jews in America, you know, there's streams within Judaism, right? And so we know about the Reform Jews and Conservative Jews and Orthodox Jews. Yeah. And let's just be clear that within Orthodoxy, which is actually, I converted within modern Orthodox movement, within Orthodoxy, being progressive, pursuing social justice is actually not often seen as integral to the faith as it is, particularly in the reform movement. So like for me, as someone who is Black and progressive, I came into the faith modern Orthodox because I also appreciated the ritual. I also appreciated the story. I really appreciate, you know, I appreciated other things other than social justice, but I will tell you that being in Orthodox circles and being who I am is sometimes like, whoa, it's not always the most fun place to be. That is a place where I'm often the only one in the room, if you may, and can be very unsettling to bring these values into places where they're not. I mean, and I'm pointing that out because there have been groups who that have started in the last few years, Uriel Tzedek or Torah Trump's Hate, that are explicitly for Jews who feel like they're progressive, but are also within the modern Orthodox or within the Orthodox community. So the fact that that exists means that it hasn't always been easy to hold these values and be in that part of the tradition.
Yeah. And I did not know that. Thank you so much for pointing that out. And you explained it so well. We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
Are you ready to shop? Rakuten's Big Give Week is back. Get 15% back at hundreds of stores, and it's all happening this week, May 6th to May 13th. It's the perfect time to shop for everything on your list for spring and summer, like clothing, outdoor gear, and travel. I know I'm using this week to stock up on some warmer weather essentials at Ray-Ban and Ulta, and I love that Rakuten even helps me save on travel at sites like hotels.com. Rakuten really is the best way to shop, and you can save even more by stacking cash back on top of deals. Plus, during Big Give Week, that cash back is bigger than ever. With Rakuten, membership is free, and when you sign up and shop today, you get an extra 10% cash back boost. That's an extra 10% cash back on top of the 15% cash back. You won't see higher cash back rates than these. Go to Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app. R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Shoppers get it. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
When you were talking, I was thinking how much, when you and I talked before, how much I love the stories of Judaism. And when my kids were little, we did Shabbat, or I did Shabbat with them. And my ex-husband joined in, but I was the one who initiated. I went to our local coffee bean and got the challah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we, because they have it there. I don't know why they have it there, but they do. every Friday, it's so good. It's the best bread I've ever eaten. And we did Shabbat, and it was really important for me, for my kids who are half Jewish and half Black, to have a strong understanding of where they came from. Yeah. And that's a huge part of where they come from. And I was just like, wow, I wish Black people did this. I wish we told stories and passed them down. We have this oral history. It's also written, but the oral history was what really got me. Yeah. The stories we tell at the high holidays, and it's the same every year.
Right, and at Passover, right? The Passover,
and at
the
Passover,
Seder.
Yeah.
The Seder is the most participated in event of the Jewish calendar, right? You know,
yes.
Like Jews all over, Jews who don't do anything Jewish for 364 other days a year, on that first night of Passover, they're sitting at the Seder about to recline, right? And I think that, you know, I want to lift up something you just said about that transfer and about, you know, making sure your kids knew exactly where they came from. And I think for me, one of the things that I wrestled with as a parent and mother of biracial, Black, and Jewish children was that I think I sometimes move too far in the direction of making sure that they were sound in their Jewish identity, because I didn't want anybody to be able to tell them diddly squat about who they were, because the Jewish community has a near, I mean, it goes way back, but we are obsessed with who's in and who's out and who's a real Jew and who's not a real Jew. And people of color who are Jews are subject to that analysis and that critique and those questions all the time. And so I feel like as a parent, I was like, I wanted to make sure that nobody could tell them anything about them being Jewish or not, because I always knew that Black folks would accept them no matter what.
Right, right. On site.
On site.
Yes.
On site.
Which is, yeah, because optically, that's a big thing.
Yep.
The optics of a group, and if you look like you belong, that is a big thing. It doesn't mean you belong, but it's one huge step that you don't have to worry about.
It's a huge step. And, you know, you mentioned I converted to Judaism, and folks who are white, but who've got that stereotypical Jewish look, but also converted, they don't get asked the questions. They don't get assumed that they were born Jewish or not, right? And I think what's interesting is that actually we're not supposed to put people on blast about whether or not they converted. Like it is halachic. It is like Jewish law that we're not supposed to ask these questions. We're not supposed to be public unless you're trying to marry me. My like born or converted status should be really of none of your business. But that is not something that the Jewish community has really internalized. And it makes it hard for those of us who either don't look the part or who came into the tradition later in life.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I wanted to talk to you about it. And I know that you had mentioned that within the communities that you've chosen, you have felt welcomed for the most part. Is that correct?
That is correct. I feel like I've been really lucky because it wasn't like I, you know, went through with a scorecard before I joined synagogues or moved places, right? I didn't know what I was getting into. I didn't know that I was going to be met with open arms and open hearts necessarily, but I think I did luck out.
Yeah. I had the same experience in our community where I hadn't converted, but I was still part of it. It was seamless. I never felt othered there, except for I told you that a few of the members spoke Farsi and I can't speak Farsi. So there was that, like the language thing. But I wanted to talk to you about how Black people and non-Jewish people react when they find out that you're Jewish. I know there's a spectrum, but give me just kind of like what's typical.
So I'll tell you a typical response is, I didn't know that Black people could be Jewish. That happens a lot when I'm in my salon and, you know, a common occurrence will be being in the salon and someone says, I'm going to get lunch. I keep kosher. And so someone will say, I'm going to get lunch. I'm going to Five Guys or whatever. I'm not going to eat at Five Guys. And so I say, you know, I'm good. I actually am kind of hungry, but I don't eat that because I keep kosher. And that's like, what? Well, kosher? You keep kosher. You're Jewish. So that is, it hasn't been a negative response. I haven't gotten, you know, an anti-Semitic response from folks. I've just gotten like incredulousness, right? Disbelief that I could exist and appreciation, actually, in many cases, for basically being who I am with them. Now, the flip side is being in progressive spaces, progressive political spaces, where folks might not know I'm Jewish and will say some of the darndest things when people don't know that there's someone Jewish sitting at the table or in the room, it's clear that, you know, anti-Semitism, anti-Semitic tropes and ideas are so prevalent and so common that they just come off the, they roll off the tongue, and things that people would never say in front of Black folks, you know, they can say in front of folks they don't know are Jewish.
Mm-hmm. You know, like generalizations, that type of thing?
Mm-hmm. Generalizations, some of the old stereotypes around money or the like, control of the media, these sorts of things. They're very pervasive. They're very common. And I think that what folks don't get is that, like, the Jewish community in America, yeah, I'm going to admit that, and I think it, we can't not, is still mostly white. It is largely middle class and above. There are a lot of, you know, the Jewish community has unprecedented access and power and influence. Like, these are true things. They're absolutely true things. But what's anti-Semitic about it? And so it's hard to sometimes hold that reality that the Jewish community in the United States does have these markings of success and can still be marginalized and oppressed in different ways. Like, oppression of the Jewish community, anti-Semitism doesn't look like racism. It doesn't look like transphobia. It doesn't show up in the same way. And so I think what I want people to know, as someone who experiences sexism, racism, and anti-Semitism sometimes in the same damn day, that it all looks different. And only I, as a Black person, can say what's racist, and as a woman, say what's sexist, and as a Jew, say what's anti-Semitic. It still is in the purview of the oppressed community to decide what's harm. And that is something that's, like, so live right now, especially in the United States, that I grapple with all the time.
Mm. Gosh, I want to have a whole nother hour conversation about what you just said.
Because let's do it.
It's just so, let's do it. Yeah. I was just thinking about when it was a few months ago, Palestine and Israel were at the height of the fighting that was happening over the summer. And then here in Los Angeles, people who looked Jewish were getting attacked on the street.
Yeah.
And while they were at restaurants. And so whatever that means, look Jewish, right? They were in places that served Jewish food or Jewish grocery stores or Jewish neighborhoods. They were wearing yarmulkes. There's another name for them. What is it?
A kippah.
Kippah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And so these people were being attacked openly on the street, very much like the hate crimes against Asian people that are being perpetrated. And what I thought was really interesting about that was security was invoked. There were armed security guards traveling these neighborhoods as a direct response to protect the people that lived there, which I was just, like, in full admiration of. And then also just the horror that this is actually needed, that people are in danger when they go out and get coffee or go out and for a walk because of this thing. So anti-Semitism, for people who may want to dismiss it, please don't.
Right.
Please don't. It is real. And like you said, it looks different when it's sexism. It looks different when it's racism, but it doesn't diminish it or make it any less real.
Exactly. And I will just also point out, at least not all Jews, and I know if people hear this, I don't know what people are going to say to this, to respond to this next statement, but, like, there's an element of some Jewish folks could take off the kippah if they wanted to. They don't have to wear the tzitzit. There's an element of being able to blend in if you really wanted to that Black folks don't get. And so I don't know that I necessarily put them on the same page as a Black Jewish woman who's married to a white Jewish man whose Black children wear kippot and tzitzit on their bodies. They could take them off. And there have been people who do. They've taken off their Stars of David. They have, you know, removed the trappings of external Jewishness. And that's, we should never be forced to do that. And the fact that we can, to me, is just something that's important to make a distinction about. And you're right. And you're right. We should all be able to walk down the street wearing whatever we want and being whoever we are without at risk of being killed, either by other people or by police.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Yes. Tell me about your podcast, The Bentel. Is it Bentel?
It's A Bentel Brief, which is Yiddish.
A Bentel Brief.
Yes. It's Yiddish for a bundle of letters, Bentel. I'm on the show with my illustrious co-host, Glenn Harris, and we give out Jewish advice. People send us questions.
It's so great.
We have so much fun. And I'll tell you, you guys didn't get to hear our pilot episode, which was sort of our screen test, our audio test of working with each other. We didn't know each other from a hole in the wall before started doing this podcast. And we did this one question, sex party rabbi, y'all. It was hilarious. Someone went to a sex party. This was a question. Someone went to a sex party, saw their rabbi there without the rabbi's significant other, spouse, partner. And so the question was, what do I do? I just saw my rabbi at a sex party. We had a great time with that episode and no one's ever going to get to hear it. But we answer sex party questions. We answer questions about interfaith relationships, careers. We cover it all. We just wrapped up season one and we're hoping to get started on season two pretty soon here.
Well, I got to tell you, it's so much fun to listen to. I listened to a few episodes and your trailer's really great. What was your answer to what would you do if you saw your rabbi at a sex party without their significant other?
Well, the thing is, the person who sent in the question, she was having all sorts of anxiety. She was like, oh my gosh, like I saw him there. What am I going to do? And I was like, okay, you need to, first of all, get over yourself a little bit. Like, it's okay. People do things. You don't know what someone's personal life is. And so it feels to me like she needed to maybe, first of all, examine what was going on. Like, why was it so hard for her to see him there? What was happening in her that made it problematic for her to, you know, interact with him or see him? And then I think she should just talk to him. And I'll say that, you know, we've done 10 episodes and the overriding theme of our advice is go talk to the person. Because like you have to. And if she is his congregant, she can't go to shul and see his face and see him doing whatever she might have seen him doing at the sex party while he's trying to deliver, you know, his drush, right? So I feel like she needs to go talk to him if she wants to be a part of that community and be in relationship with him. And this is something that is causing her tremendous pain and agony. She's got to talk about it. But I do think that she should maybe begin to think about what other people's lives, how much the other people's lives are their own. And that even though he is a rabbi, and we also talked a little bit about the fact that when you're a rabbi, maybe you should not go to sex parties. Like, just maybe. I mean, you know, it might not be the best thing. And we, maybe, I don't know. I'm not a rabbi, but I think there might be like a code of professional ethics where it might be frowned upon to do something like that. So that's neither here nor there. I'm just putting it out there, but that she needs to talk to him. She needs to talk to him.
We went on vacation once when my kids were little. We went to Hawaii and we saw their pediatrician in a bikini on the beach and my kids were traumatized. And I was like, it's okay. Dr. Diamond can have fun. This is what she looks like under her lab coat. But they just did not look at her the same after that. It was a traumatic experience for them seeing her out of context.
Wow. Like it's like the next level version of when you run into your teacher at the grocery store. Like your doctor at the beach is like, whoa, that's a whole different kettle of fish.
I mean, I was a little shocked too. I got over it. This has been so enjoyable. And you're so great to talk to. And we have so much in common. I'm really, really glad that we got to do this. Tell me where people can find you.
Laura, this has been tremendous, a fun time. I'm on Instagram, GINNAGREEN. I'm also on Twitter, but don't follow me there because I'm very episodic. I'm very episodic in my tweets. And so I'm not a reliable Twitter user. I can be really great. I'm also on Facebook as well. You can check out A Bentel Brief wherever you get your podcasts too.
Yes. And please do. Like I said, it's such a fun listen. And they give really good advice and the letters. And I love the idea that I love the fact that a bentel is a bundle of letters.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. It's all good. And it's good to listen to while you're driving. That's what I did to and from. Just listen to a few episodes and you will be smiling for sure. Thank you, Gina. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gina.
Thanks, Scott. It was great to be here.
Thank you so much for listening. The Only One in the Room is produced by the creative genius that is Scott Slaughter and edited by the uber-talented polymath Christina Barcy and her team at Avon House Productions. Hey, you're still listening? Good. Please subscribe right now while you're thinking about it, quick, before you forget. And be sure to like and leave us a review of the show. Want to connect with some other Only One listeners? Be sure to join our private Only One in the Room Facebook group, or check out Patreon on our website for exclusive content that you won't find anywhere else. And do you have an Only One in the Room story that you'd like to share? Please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com.
Hi, it's Jennifer, a founder of Go Kid Go and a mom to two kids. Join my family on the story train with calm conductor Birdie each night as we travel through the magic rainbow tunnel to everywhere and anywhere to find the best bedtime stories. Search for Story Train on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.